Live from the Madhouse, this is Austin Danger Podcast, now and forever, the only randomly curated Austin Powers podcast on the internet. I'm Kev, and as always, I'm joined by super producer extraordinaire Mackenzie Wilkes.
Hello.
Every week when I say that, my cat is...
Yowling. Wow, we have loud. A third co-host.
He's loud today. And the reason that Toast is so outspoken is because he's a big Rod Serling fan, I take it.
Rod Serling?
That's right, Rod Serling, the original writer of the script for tonight's film, 1968's Planet of the Apes.
Oh, all right.
And yeah, speaking of big trivia, just today, while you were watching the movie, you learned what?
That it was released on the exact same day as 2001, which is cuckoo bananas.
Absolutely nuts. What a Barbenheimer, right? Could you imagine?
Planet of 2001. I can't think of a fun, kitschy name combining these two titles.
Well, look, you have plenty of time to think of one. We'll be talking about it at the bottom of the hour. But first, Kenzo, I got to hear about what you've been watching.
Yeah, I mean, I watched a lot. I'm getting back into a swing of some sort. I feel like I have to mention this because I think, as last I checked, it was in your top four. I did watch Adaptation.
Yeah, I love this movie.
I've had it in my watch list for a while. I think, honestly, just because, I mean, a couple years ago now, watched Being John Malkovich. Obviously, I love that movie so much. It's one of my favorite movies ever. And I ended up also checking out, fucking Jesse Buckley.
I'm thinking of Ending Things.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a Netflix movie. That's why you can't remember it.
I know, but it's pretty good, honestly. Like I checked that out as well.
Did you know Charlie Kaufman co-wrote a DreamWorks movie called Orion in the Dark?
Yeah.
That came out on Netflix at some point in the last 12 weeks and just like
no one's
never
talked
heard
about
it.
Yeah, it's kind of cuckoo bananas.
Like people quietly doing Letterboxd reviews, but besides that, nothing on this film. What is going on over there?
No advertising for the great Charlie Kaufman, who, yeah, I really liked. I'm thinking of Indie Things. I really love Being John Malkovich. And so I've been wanting to watch Adaptation because the concept always seemed kind of interesting to me. And I remember hearing about trivia around the kind of Oscar season this had, about Donald being credited in the Oscar nominations. It's very funny. Rachel walked in literally as I was finishing the movie and she saw In Memory of Donald Kaufman. And Rachel went, "Aww." And I had to go, "No, he's not real." And then she turned to me and said, "What the fuck are you talking about?" And it was so funny to then have to explain to Rachel the plot of Adaptation. If you haven't seen Adaptation, it's too convoluted for me to try to explain it here. So please just go watch it. You know, if you like Mackenzie Kev, audacious, big swing, weirdo cinema, you will like Adaptation.
Yeah. I mean, what more can I say? It's one of those, just like Sideways, it was one of my groundwork movies. So absolutely highly recommend. And Shout Factory has a great Blu-ray as well.
Oh, I didn't know that, actually. I didn't realize it had a special blue. But yeah,
I don't know if there's like a whole bunch of extras on there, but oh, there's a still gallery. You can look at some pictures.
You can look at the pictures of the movie you're going to watch. Yeah.
What a treat.
It's a great Nicolas Cage performance, an incredible, probably one of his best as far as the films I've seen. And I've seen quite a lot of Nicolas Cage movies. Interesting Meryl Streep performance. Don't know if it's like the greatest Meryl Streep I've ever seen, but like interesting for her to go in this direction. I think, like, I feel like it's something you never see her do, and I think that's really interesting. You're raising eyebrows, Kev.
I'm waiting for it. Go ahead.
Oh, Chris You'll Cooper, mind blowing.
Oh yeah, man.
Yes.
Holy motherfucking moly, Chris Cooper in Adaptation changed my life. That what an amazing performance, right?
What Sorry. An amazing performance. Academy it. Yeah, Academy Award winning performance, I believe, and rightfully so. I don't know who else is nominated, but fuck it, that's a great performance. One of the most unique performances I've seen probably ever. Like, the whole movie is filled with like unique performances, and I mean that like in the best way of like, you won't see these actors doing this like in any other movie, really. Like, maybe Cage because he lives in weirdo land, but like it's just a unique, and they only can exist in this one space. And it's so meta and interesting. And it's, you know, it's again, it's hard and convoluted to describe if you have not seen it, but like, yeah, it's worth a watch. I had a really good time with it, and it's on your top four. So I wanted to see it because I want to love the movies you love, Kev.
I got to make the canon. I got to make the big list. Maybe the this canon. Year, maybe this summer is the summer I make the big list. Oh, once shit. And for all. I've toyed with it. I've played around with it, but maybe I got to make that journey and figure out the list.
Hell yeah. Speaking of something that probably won't be in either of our canons, you texted me after I rated this film 2 stars and said, thank you. And I said, we should shit talk on ADP. And I think based on my mutuals ratings, this is going to be hot takes, I think. Maybe? Most people I follow have this at 4 and 5 stars. I have 500 Days of Summer at a whopping 2 stars. I didn't like that movie at all. And I don't want you to be like, McKinsey, you've missed the point. He's supposed to be an asshole. I understand what it's trying to do. I understand what it's trying to say. I just don't think it's done in a way that is interesting or effective for me personally. Kev, we didn't really expand, but you texted me thank you. So I have to imagine you're somewhere in the same realm.
Yeah, some people would call 500 Days of Summer the La La Land of its day. And I think that's about accurate. I've never really loved it. I'll see people where they're at. There is one, the expectation versus reality scene.
Yeah.
Is great. I really enjoyed that. But otherwise, I understand that that's the point. But sometimes that's the point is really frustrating. I'm somebody who says that's the point all the time. I joked about having to do that on Big Trouble in Little China, but thankfully you got it and really enjoyed that. But like, I don't know. I don't know. It's just not it. It made me, it was, you know what it was? I hate to say it. This is such incel behavior, but in the attempt to make a good discussion and good audio for y'all, I will reveal that my issue with the movie is that the man looks like Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So while he may be processing this as some grand loss, in the balance of the universe and in the movie, it doesn't matter. He just meets somebody like at the doctor's office. Who cares? Whatever. It's Joseph Gordon-Levitt. It'll be fine. And I know that that's like part of it and the point.
Yeah.
But like, also, that's such a feel bad, like, and not even in the artistic, interesting feel bad way. It just feel bad, like empty and bad to me.
Yeah, I feel like what hit me afterward was I have no entry point to this movie, because like I think yes, while the point is that he's like not a good guy, and the people who identify with him probably have a lot of growing up to do. I understand that. I understand that that's the point. And like kudos to Joseph Gordon-Levitt for like constantly having to reiterate for fans of this movie that like this is not a good guy, which Rachel informed me of, and that's very funny that Joseph Gordon-Levitt is trying to be like, this is not an aspirational man, please stop. But like I do think that the film at least wants you to like him. I do think that even though the film is like, this guy's not a good guy, I do think the film wants you to like him by way of either having been him, being him, or him at the moment, dated him, was that guy's brother or was that guy's sister? You know, like I think that you have to at least know these characters or identify with Zooey Deschanel, have dated Zooey Deschanel. Like, I feel like you have to have some sort of entry point to this. And I don't want to be like, it's maybe just of my have never dated men experience. I just was like, I don't get who this guy is. I don't get what she sees in him. I don't understand. Like, I felt so alienated by the characters and not charmed by them in any capacity because it all just felt so convoluted and, I don't know, just poorly done. Like, I mean, God, like, you know, I'm sure the common thing levied at it is that, like, you know, Zooey Deschanel's character, titular Summer, is highly underdeveloped. And then your argument is, well, it's from his point of view, so she's underdeveloped because he only sees her as an image. And I go, cool. Just because that's the point doesn't mean it's done well to me. I don't know. So, yeah, didn't like 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah. I'll never see that movie again. I don't even think it's on the wheel. It links for sure, but, you know, it's out of the scope of Austin Danger Podcast. 500 Days of Summer and Schindler's List. Out of the scope of Austin Pod.
And I guess one little thing to leave you all on. I, for some reason, was craving a rewatch of the Julie Taymor film Across the Universe lately. Which is a film I was completely obsessed with in high school. And I haven't watched in a while, and I noticed there was a 4K of it. I saw Blu-ray.com, and I saw a 4K, and I said, man, I bet that movie looks awesome in 4K. And you know what? I picked it up. I was interested. I wanted to rewatch. I said, let's do this. And obviously, while it is not the as great of a film as I remember in my head, it is very much like a film I loved in high school. And it makes me feel kind of warm because of that. Because I, all the lyrics, all the specific intonations and all of these scenes, I could tell, like, every time a song ended, I was like, and now it's going to be this song. Like, I realized how much of it was so rooted deep in my brain. It kind of felt cool to feel like a kid again watching this kind of bad movie. But I do like the songs, and I told Rachel something connected with me in my brain on this watch. I think the reason why I loved the movie so much, and by proxy the song so much, I wore that soundtrack out. I had never really heard the Beatles when I was younger. So I do think that maybe my first time hearing these songs was this movie. And I think that inadvertently led to me having a fondness for this movie and specifically the soundtrack. And then I was like, wow, what a plebe I was that, like, I think the first time I heard, like, most Beatles songs was probably Across the Universe when I was 12, 11, 12.
Yeah, but that's why it's there, you know? Like,
yeah.
I didn't hear any of this stuff until, you know, there are so many movies that I hadn't seen that I only know about through parodies on The Simpsons and Futurama and the 5-second bunny shorts, you know? I've only known stuff through parody. So I get that. We'll dissect that one day. I will say I love the scene. This is a bit of a spoiler, but the scene where Bono plays a magic hippie who abandons them in the desert or whatever. I could not believe my eyes and ears in the theater seeing the film.
Wow. I cannot wait till we watch it. I got the 4K fucking ready to ready to go.
I feel like now so removed from it, I will come at it in a different way.
Hell yeah.
I feel like I'll like it more than I remember.
I think Taymor is interesting. She's very like our brand of like big swing weirdo shit. Like we're going to hopefully watch her Titus soon. Her Titus Andronicus. We're planning to watch it this weekend maybe because it's on YouTube. So
why isn't our podcast about that?
Titus Andronicus podcast.
You and I doing Taylor Max Gary, the sequel to Titus Andronicus.
Oh,
can I tell you, by the way, like I've talked to a lot of people about a lot of different plays.
Yes.
The strongest reactions I've ever seen were for Gary, the sequel to Titus Andronicus. I never read it. I missed it with Nathan Lane on Broadway. Man, do I regret not going to
I
that.
Would love to see anyway, that, yeah.
Sorry, a digression no. and a digression in a sidebar.
Well, like, let's get back on track. And Kev, what did you watch this week?
I want to talk about an ongoing thing. I believe that on the macro level, this is probably going to be the story of my 2024. Folks will remember that Dune Part 2 got lost in the wash on this show of the Austins and stuff, but is one of the great films, in my opinion. This cinch, it's like a major achievement. Incredible. It's a sequel, right? I saw Ghostbusters last week, significantly worse movie than Dune Part 2. And I went in expecting to really dislike it, but I ended up having a lot of fun. This week, the movie is Godzilla. The proper pronunciation is Godzilla Kong, the New Empire.
Mm.
There's an X in between Godzilla and Kong that is silent.
What?
Yeah. And
who explained this? The semantics of this name.
Oh, I have no. I forgot who did it. Shoot, that really sucks. No, it was on Big Picture last week.
Oh,
they were talking about it. So, you know, no shade. I want to give first of all a shout out to our dear friends Jaysher and Micah, who, as of this week, have finished their mission of watching every Godzilla film and associated product. Within reason. These guys, they've done all the Toho kaiju movies. They've done like any Godzilla thing you can think of at this time. They've done, and I just want to give a big shout out and congratulations to them.
Insane feat.
This is like if Austin Powers 4 came out. Could you imagine? to get back to the movie, this is another situation where, like Ghostbusters, I just find myself having fun. I just stopped caring. And I think that's the thing, is at a certain point, you just can't care. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes you go to a movie, right? You'll go to, here's a great example. I want to see this movie, The Beast, with Léa Seydoux. It opens this weekend. I'm going to try to go. We'll see how it goes. But like, I'll be thinking during that movie, mm-hmm. right? Sometimes, yeah. Fuck it. The two monkeys are going to fight. It's going to be great. Who cares? And I think that Letterboxd sometimes can trap people. Because, like, this is not... Apocalypse Now, right, is a 5-star movie. Mm-hmm. But certainly Godzilla Kong, The New Empire is nowhere on the scale of Apocalypse Now, right? It doesn't come close. It's like a 2.5-star movie in comparison. So I decided I don't care about that. And I've just kind of lost the segment. I've just completely lost control of the segment. My point is that people should have more fun. Who cares? The movie is really dumb. I have to be honest with you. I completely lost the plot halfway through. I just stopped. I really just stopped in a way I've rarely stopped before. The Dolby sound kicked my ass. It's incredible. But the other thing is, so the big narrative is the sequels are going to be kind of weak and weird, but they're a lot of fun, so who cares? And we'll see how that rules out with other things. I think Furiosa and Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, for example, are far easier sells than Beetlejuice 2.
But yeah,
we'll see. And yeah, besides that, I've been kind of in a rut. I mean, my girlfriend and I just tanked a 3-body problem on Netflix in like 2 weeks.
Mm.
That was a lot of fun. A very weird show. I talked about that a bit on Escape Hatch. Don't want to repeat myself from there. But it's great. But the other thing, the thing with 3-body problem is this is a new show from the creators of Game of Thrones. And Netflix, of course, like they always do, dropped all 8 episodes at once.
Oh my God.
And it's like there's stuff in there that would have been incredible like for 7 days.
Mm.
Right? Like if your last impression of the show is like, oh my God, I can't believe it. But instead, it's this 8-hour movie you took 2 weeks to watch and it'll sit kind of like fruitcake in your stomach, unmoved, until it's time to watch it again. And I was really disappointed about that. But I've been banging that drum for 3 years. This is like an Ammonite era Kev take. very enjoyable. And yeah, I mean, I'm getting back into movies with a vengeance this weekend. Very excited for Monkey Man. I will be seeing The Beast. And The People's Joker.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Very exciting. Big Austin's contender. We'll see how that goes.
I'm excited. I think it's Chicago at the end of the month, so I got to see if I can get tickets.
Lovely. Get them now. Get them as quickly as you can because they're going to go quick. I think Vera Drew is here for like 2 Q&As, and they're already sold. Well, they sold out very quickly. So.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I'm so happy. I'm so happy for Vera Drew.
It's an amazing moment. It's a big year for Jokers.
Like, I know that it's like not as big as something like Barbenheimer, but it does feel like The People's Joker is having this huge moment, at least with extremely like filmy people online, because I'm seeing so much support and excitement for it. And like the fact that like everyone knows it's been this multi-year legal battle to like see this movie, and how amazing of a feat of like just free speech and art this is like to exist and you be able to go purchase a ticket to see it in a theater. It's just, it's really cool. It's a cool moment. Cool. There's a cultural thing.
I didn't expect to see a piece about it in the New York Times, and that was a really cool thing.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Well, speaking of cool things.
Whoop-dit news. What does it all mean, Basil?
Now it's time for Austin News. This is the segment where we talk about the groovy, shagadelic news in the world of Austin Powers, baby. Yeah. And what better time for there to be actual Austin tangential news?
Tangential is doing a lot of heavy lifting.
The director of the Austin Powers trilogy, Jay Roach. Kenzo, he's got a new movie.
I saw this on April Fool's, and I thought it was an April Fool. But now that I think about it, it's a little too specific, I guess, to be an April Fool.
Yeah. So the news is that Searchlight has greenlit a remake of the Danny DeVito directed film The War of the Roses with Benedict Cumberbatch and Olivia Colman,
directed by like Jay Roach. That's just crazy to me.
I have no idea. Look, we didn't talk about this beforehand. Needless to say, we will be doing the War of the Roses on Awesome Danger Podcast when the time comes.
I'm looking
in 2029
at the Wikipedia for this movie, because I think I always associated the War of the Roses with like the historical time in England. So I don't think I thought it was going to be this like historical medieval drama. I didn't realize this was a remake of a Danny DeVito movie.
Oh yeah, the poster is amazing because they put Danny. First of all, it's Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner. I haven't seen the movie, but if that weren't enough, the poster has Danny DeVito on it, like thinking about something, as if to say, like, this came from the mind of Danny DeVito or something. He's on the poster in a disruptive way.
Yeah, this is so goofy. I mean, I love Kathleen Turner. I mean, I don't know. Formo has this.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
three
yeah.
And a half.
Okay. He's smoking a cigarette, and Kathleen Turner and Michael Douglas are in the cloud of the cigarette smoke.
Oh, there's another poster that's great that is like Danny DeVito and Kathleen and Michael are like leaning on him, almost kissing. It's in the custom posters.
Somebody who needs an equally enthusiastic friend to start War of the Roses pod is screaming at their phones right now. He's in the movie. He's their lawyer. He's the lawyer. I don't know. Maybe he's the lawyer. I don't know.
Well,
I just made that person even angrier.
This is, I mean, yeah, we got to cover this remake, right? Because it's Jay Roach's next film. Are we now on the road to the War of the Roses? The War of the Roses. No.
The planet of the War of the Roses.
The journey to the planet of the War of the Roses.
Escape from the battle of the War of the Roses. Harry Potter and the War of the Roses.
I'm trying to think of something funny. Austin Powers in the War of the Roses. That's going to be so Austin stupid. 4. Austin makes an appearance.
Could you imagine if the remake of The War of the Roses had Mike Myers
was a back
in
door,
it in a conspicuous role?
Was a backdoor back Austin 4 pilot, yeah.
It's like Fartin Gary is the new is the new character. He's like, hello, everybody, I'm Gary. Like, it's Cockney. Like, he's trying something very subtle in the British accent. God. And that'll be how we get to Austin 4. I mean, the thing that's most relevant to us about this, to try and bring this back, is that this is Jay getting behind the director's chair again.
That's true.
Did you see Bombshell?
I did not see Bombshell.
See, maybe we should table that for the road to the War of the Roses.
That's our pregame for the War of the Roses.
Is the Fox News scandal movie.
Wow, the popular reviews are really, they're going in.
Well, look, we're all excited for Jay Roach's next movie. That is, again, a reimagining of Danny DeVito's 1990 film, The War of the Roses, set to be called The Roses. So very exciting to get something. It's something.
It's, oh my God, Jay Roach directed the Julianne Moore, Sarah Palin movie?
Oh, Game Change? We should do Game Change, election night special.
My jaw is on the floor.
Have you seen that movie?
No.
Oh, it's fine.
I was quite young when it came out. I think I only know Sarah Palin. I only knew of her in the context of SNL when I was that age. I did not really know anything else about her.
I mean, that's all there is to know. The Game Change is basically about that. So
at the end, Tina Fey shows up.
Oh, people don't like me. Ooh. All right. Can we talk apes?
You want to talk apes, baby? Let's talk apes.
I was on Escape Hatch this week talking to Alita Battle Angel with H and Jason. it went about as well as you may expect. I had a lot of fun with it. It's a really fun show. People should check it out. Again, that is Escape Hatch, former and perhaps future guests. Who could say? And yeah, people should go check that out. It went better than it. I'm sounding trying to plug it. But they good. Did not like this film. And in fact, Age is trying to say that Avatar The Way of Water is poorly written. Which, you know, it's the first half of a story, buddy. First half of a story. So,
whoa.
We'll see next year when Avatar 2 comes out. We can Avatar 3, the Seedbearer working title comes out. but now I think it's time to talk about apes. You think so?
Let's talk apes, baby.
Three astronauts awaken from hypersleep to find that they are about to crash land on a mysterious planet, perhaps, according to the astronaut Taylor's estimate, the Bellatrix system, 300 light years from their home solar system. They also read on the ship's time chronometer, which is Wikipedia claims it is a chronometer, that it is 2006 years after they left Earth. They wander around for a while, but are eventually intercepted first by a band of kind of caveman people, and then giant man-sized apes on horses. There's no other way to describe it. Who soon take them in. Okay. They center in on this guy, Taylor. Taylor, if you haven't seen the movie, Taylor looks like an old Wild West prospector, and he laughs like one too. And they put him right in jail, and then begins a series of long, long, long tribunals about the nature of cognition, evolution, what is a man, what is ape, how does he understand our religion, and etc. There's just wild stuff I won't even spoil, but eventually these two apes, Cornelius and Zira, they befriend Taylor, and they allow him to become free from the grip of the bizarre Dr. Zaius. And he is allowed to go out to the Forbidden Zone. And we don't know what the Forbidden Zone is. We hear about it throughout the film, but we never quite see it until the end of the film, where it is revealed that in the Forbidden Zone lies the Statue of Liberty. That planet they thought they landed on, it was Earth the whole time.
You maniacs! You blew it up! Damn you! Damn you all to hell!
It's an all-time classic, Planet of the Apes.
Kev, we recently talked about our apes' histories, but if I'm going to be real, I don't fucking remember. So, Kev, give me your history with Planet of the Apes.
So, I think Rise of the Planet of the Apes was my first Planet of the Apes movie. Or so I remember now. I may have said differently. Look, I don't even trust myself for the time, you know what I mean? So I went back to this probably that summer, 2011, and then came back to it again in 2021 when Bat and Spider did Hot Ape Summer, and now we're back at it for this. I know you haven't seen it.
Mm-mm.
Is that correct? Yeah.
I had never seen it before, no.
Yeah, so I hope you understand. I was comfortable, but what did you know about Planet of the Apes before watching this?
This film or the franchise?
Did you not know that the Planet of the Apes was Earth before watching Rise of the Planet of the Apes?
I think I did, and I don't know why. Okay. I did, but like I spent the whole movie knowing it was
cultural.
Yeah. We'll talk about it, but yeah, it's weird to watch the movie knowing that because it feels like so much of the tension, it kind of undercuts a lot of the tension, especially in that final act. So I don't know how I knew that, but I just kind of did. I don't know. It was kind of weird.
I know what you mean. It's a big cultural osmosis thing. It's like Luke, I'm your father.
Yeah.
Which isn't even what he says. But like it got absorbed into the cultural zeitgeist and it got parodied all the time. And so it was one of these things that just you just knew. That's why I was so comfortable doing Rise of the Planet of the Apes when we did, is because like they knew that the spoiler was so known that they could hinge a franchise on, let's set it on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start on Earth as it becomes the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's get right into that. This movie, newcomers to the film, in my observation, and let's see if that was true for Mackenzie, may realize that this movie is just three really long conversations and then the reveal. So Mackenzie, I'm wondering what you thought of the pacing of the movie.
Yeah, it's different for what I would expect in a film like this. But, you know, I guess at the time it was being made, like, I don't know if it was being thought of as a franchise per se. I'm curious if the intention was for it to kind of just stand alone as this kind of singular piece. And so because of that, it wasn't necessarily beholden to the ideas we have about franchises, right? So yeah, it really is like, I mean, God, the first 30 minutes is really just Ben walking around and panting and saying weird stuff. Like there's nothing really happens for 30 minutes. You're just kind of watching these men and like they're dodging things with like immense anxiety that are like barely dangerous. Like there's a part where there's like a pebble. It looks like it's like so small, like a rock, not even taller than them, rolling slowly, and they run from it like it's a pack of hyenas. Like they run from it and the rock like barely rolls near them, and they like, it's just comical how undangerous it looks, but we're watching them walk around like they are being chased by ghouls for 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's a difficult tightrope to walk in a couple ways. Like number one, your main mission, I feel like if you're trying to make this movie, is make the audience forget that they're on Earth.
Yeah.
Which is hard to do when all your money goes into ape masks.
Yeah.
But right. And also you're clearly shooting in like
Arizona.
On Earth.
Yeah. Like
clearly,
I'm like in Arizona.
Just, yeah. Like
just
in
like,
the desert.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. So it's like, that's tough. And B, the other two guys are not played by actors on the level of literally Charlton Heston. So
yeah,
it's tough for me to believe that they will survive the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, like I didn't feel any connection to them at all. And I feel like you're supposed to care about them, and especially Taylor, who I will get into. He kind of bounced right off of me a lot. But like, yeah, it's like it's truly this weird running around for 30 minutes. Then the inciting incident happens of the apes are here. We are seeing these apes. And then you're kind of thrust into like trying to figure out these masks and like what's going on and who these characters are, and then you're right, and then like for the next hour then it's like the same conversation happens over and over and over and over and over again, and like every 20 minutes within that hour Charlton Heston will try to run away and you'll see his little cheeks a lot, and then he'll get captured, and then we're having the conversation again, and we're just saying the same thing for like an hour, and then it's like, oh, and it's Earth. You know, that's what the movie structure was to me. Guys walking for 30 minutes, the same conversation for an hour, and then the reveal.
I want listeners to know that even though I'm about to agree with Mackenzie, I fucking love that's the movie. I find those conversations actually really interesting, but I get it.
Yeah. It's just very repetitive as a film.
It feels like it was written as a Twilight Zone episode, and then yes. He was like, oh, maybe I can make a movie out of this. Right?
Completely. Like, yeah.
Especially because the twist is so like, where do you even go from there?
Yeah, I'm sort of confused how, because I know that this 60s, 70s era has five films. So I'm curious where the franchise possibly goes in the other ones. Like, I just, seems very strange.
Can you guess? Would you like to guess?
I was reading a little bit, so it would be cheating. Okay. I know that they somehow get back to Earth, and I'm like, how the fuck does that happen? Like, I don't understand the logistics of how this happens, but yeah, it seems very strange. But I agree that it feels like an overlong Twilight Zone episode.
Go get him!
Taylor! Why did you run away?
Security police.
I'm in charge of this man.
No longer, madam. He is now in the custody of the Ministry of Science.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
So wait, hang on. So Charlton Heston, nothing?
I just didn't like him. I thought he was kind of annoying. And like, I feel like, I just find it funny, this idea of like the other is this just like normal white guy who's, I just, like, you know what I mean? Like, he's the othered character. Yeah. It's like, okay, I don't know. Like, I just, and also like, I don't know, I just found him to be kind of annoying. I loved Zira. Is that her name, right? The lady?
Yes.
Fucking loved her. Awesome performance. Favorite part of the whole movie is Zira by far. Every time she's on screen, I'm like, I'm in so deep. Love her. And I loved her a lot. And so then, like, I don't know, he was really bouncing off of me. The character, I didn't really like want him to win. Like, I didn't feel like I was rooting for him. I didn't really feel like he was a hero I cared about. I don't know. So it made it hard to kind of care about the stakes of the film, because I just didn't super care for Taylor. But then when Zira was involved in it, I really, really loved it, because I just loved that character. And I was just much more fascinated by what these apes, who Cornelius and Zira, who have been really trying to understand humanity and the past, and like their battle with this sort of staunch religious, right, like kind of immovable leadership. Like, I thought that was so much more compelling than like whatever's happening with Taylor. So I think I just like, yeah, it kind of bounced right off of me, because I just didn't super care about him.
I'm doing some self-examination on this, because I'm pretty sure the reason I love Taylor so much is because the performance is so outsized. Because this is just who Charlton Heston was, right? He didn't go to Pharaoh and demand his people's freedom. He said, "Let my people go." You know what I mean? Like, he just had it. In this film, he's truly. He did a similar thing in Soylent Green, where he's driven mad by like learning about a secret. But I love his crazy, even like when he's laughing, the famous gif.
That was like, so weird. What? That was so, this is my first time seeing him. Maybe I should caveat with that. I've never seen him in anything.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
You've never seen the Ten Commandments?
I've never seen the Ten Commandments.
Oh my God. Well, that was what I was talking about before.
I figured. I know of that movie. I've just never seen it. And yeah, I've never seen him in anything. So maybe that's why he kind of bounced off me. Cause I was just like, what are you doing, dude? Like the whole time, pretty much.
Yeah. I wonder what you would make of it then. But also like, am I really enjoying it that much? Or is it just ironic for me because the voice is funny? That's what I'm like trying to figure out.
You're a mutant. That's what Zira and Cornelius claim. You're talking heresy, Doctor.
Of course.
Well, suppose I am a mutant. How can the appearance of one mutant send you into a panic?
Because you're not unique. There's the one you call Landon.
Oh, then you admit that...
I admit that where there's one mutant, there's probably another and another and another, a whole nest of them. Where is your nest, Taylor? Where are your women?
Thank you. Thank you for calling me Taylor. Dr. Zaius, I know who I am, but who are you?
What was the point of Nova? If she was taken out, there would be no change to the film in any capacity.
None at all. In fact, it makes no sense. It feels like a studio note that they just put in there to say it was there for them. Do you know what I mean?
I needed to know I wasn't crazy.
It felt like, hey, let's give him a love interest. And I think, isn't there a woman, and then woman dies on the ship, right? They bring woman, scientist woman, our favorite character.
Scientist woman is there. And then as soon as they got out of cryosleep, she was dead. And Rachel was there when I was starting the movie. And I said, of course, the woman must die because they don't have the budget. So she's...
Rip scientist woman.
She's a zombie now.
So yeah, I don't know. The attachment to her really disarmed me in this watch. I was like, why does he care?
It's really weird because then she never speaks. Like, there's no, even though she's the love interest, and she absolutely reads as a studio note of like, oh, the only woman is a monkey. No. We got to get a hot babe in there. Like that absolutely reads. She reads as a studio note, but I would love it if they would develop their relationship at all. Why can't he teach her how to speak? And that be what maybe makes them bond. And then they can actually like have a connection that isn't just a mute baby woman being carried around by this man. Like, I would have loved it if while she was a studio note they would have developed her in literally any way, because she is so inconsequential you could edit her out of the film and nothing would change.
Well, you had to make room for the climbing of the rock face We needed 25 minutes of that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It really did get to me, by the way, this watch. And I know it's there, it's on purpose, but like, fuck, it's just so much.
Especially coming out the same weekend as 2001 A Space Odyssey, which famously I have rated pretty low because I had a pretty not great theater experience watching it. But I at least think it handles this like slowness a bit better, I think, or at least in more hypnotizing ways. So I can't imagine what it was like to see the double feature. And they're not one-to-one, but you can compare them a lot in terms of like the pacing they were trying within the genre they were trying. And it's interesting.
They're both shot in beautiful CinemaScope.
Yeah, gorgeous.
They take advantage of that wide frame. How about, so while the climbing and stuff got boring, the countryside, the desert and stuff is beautiful. Mm-hmm. I almost called it the countryside. I don't think that's how you would describe that. In my notes, I compared it to French New Wave. I don't feel prepared to argue for that, but there are some things, specifically the handheld camera in the violent scenes, the zoom, the way they do that exact zoom on a whole bunch of things.
Yes.
I don't know if you noticed, it is half the shots in the movie, so I would hope. But
I have my eyes closed.
That one zoom that builds to the Statue of Liberty reveal.
Yes.
Is great. Kenzo, while we're going down the list of big things, mm-hmm. one of the biggest things in this movie is the use of makeup, as we'll learn. The makeup artist for this film won an Academy Award for a special Academy Award just for the achievement of the makeup.
Wow.
For these ape masks.
Wow.
Here in 2024, what did you think? What a loaded way to ask that question, and I apologize. But.
No, it's fine. I fluctuated on them because, like, obviously I know, I've seen pictures, and I know, like, this is 1968. I do think you have to, when you're watching older films, tamper your expectations. I mean, I know that we watched them in, like, 2001, which people even consider those effects still really impressive for even today, by today's standards. I understand that you sometimes need to tamper your expectations with older films. You have to take with stuff like makeup and production design, you really have to take them kind of where they were at, what their budget was at. So like I wasn't coming in like gonna hate them, but there was like moments where I thought it worked better on certain actors than other actors, and there were moments that I thought that it looked better at other times. Like I thought Zira consistently looked pretty good, but there were times where her mouth would get a little too stiff. When they're more close up, you know, they definitely were a bit more careful. It seems like Cornelius, I think it worked well with. There were times with Zaius where I swear I saw the real man's lips inside the tongue when I was like, oh, that's weird. And then I noticed him starting to angle his face low, which helped hide that. And I was like, okay, interesting. So it was interesting to see them figure that hurdle out. Like, while it's like not the greatest thing I've ever seen, I can't say what I would have done. Like if I was in 1968 trying to figure out how to make people into apes, I don't know what I would have done. Like, obviously you need actors' expressiveness. You can't just kind of film monkeys and dub over them. You know what I mean? Like it's so like, I don't know what I would have done, but yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I think they found pretty much the ideal solution.
Yeah. For the time.
Like they're shooting in like harsh heat in the outdoors, experimental makeup techniques. Like you can't really ask for much more. Although I agree, the Zaius mouth, I hate to say this because it would kill the magic. It already in 1080p is risking it, but this movie rescanned in 4K. I think they've done it. I wonder what it looks like.
I don't know. I'm sure you're really seeing that inner lip.
That's really what you're looking out for in these movies.
Well, I was fascinated by the mouth. I was like, what's going on in there? And then I saw a lip and I was like, what?
I think it may be time to pop some corn.
Let's pop some corn. It did make me sad. I know it was kind of setting it up at the beginning with the kind of captain's log, but the do we still go to war and starve children? And that just kind of hit real hard, made me sad. The line, that's when the groceries run out. I wrote that down for some reason. I don't know why. I think it just made me laugh. The zooms were hitting me. The zoom on the American flag into the laugh is the weirdest thing ever. It made me laugh really, really hard.
It's so good. That shot is incredible.
It made me laugh so much. yeah, this whole first point, I was like, why are you building the tension this slow? I was losing my mind in that first kind of chunk. I liked Heston being like, I won't drink water, but I will smoke. Felt very 60s to me. Like when he says no to the water, but then he lights up a cigar immediately. And I was like, what? That feels like not good. You're in the desert. You're like about to die. Okay. The like meet cute with him and Nova is really weird. Because they're like, he's like, I think they're all mute. And then he's like strangely turned on by one of them. And I'm like, okay, dude. I thought it was very funny. They gave Zira like a feminine haircut within the A pair so that we know she's a girl. It's like, this is the girl one because she has a girl haircut. Girl monkey hair. I don't know if we talked about this when we talked about Rise, but Bright Eyes. I didn't realize Bright Eyes was a reference to the original. Did we talk about that during Rise?
I had completely forgotten at the time.
When she called him Bright Eyes, I was like, what the fuck? That's from the movie. And so that kind of delighted me that like the original monkey in this kind of new series was Bright Eyes. I thought that was just a cool,
yes.
I think that's a cool reference. I thought it was really good. In hindsight, I was able to appreciate the reference because it came up here. I was feeling really confused by the lore for quite some time. Like I wasn't 100% sure why they were hunting them, other than I guess for sport. And then I was like, I'm now confused. When they were the first scene where he was like writing to them and they're in the office, I was so confused by like where they are at as a culture, because they like have all these scientific advancements, but they don't believe in flight. Like I was just like, where are y'all?
That sent me. They hate flight.
They're like, that's impossible. It's like, what are you talking about? I just thought that was, I just could not tell. The lore confused me throughout, but there's like little moments like that where the world building just says something so fucking weird that I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, I thought the themes of the, you know, religion versus science, thought it was interesting. It came to a head in that last part, which felt kind of useless, but we'll get into it. Like that whole, like once he escapes, I'm like, cool, take me to Statue of Liberty now. Why do we need this like 20 minute interlude from like him escaping to the end of the movie? Like I was just like, what? Why is this here? I don't understand. I thought the line, he has no rights under ape law, was really funny. He has no rights under ape law. Like I like that they are, I don't know, aware that they're apes and they call their law ape law. Like if it's your law, why wouldn't you just call it law? Like why is it ape law? I don't know.
Do you think they have like ape maritime law?
I hope so.
It just maritime law? A boat is a boat, right? No matter who's the pilot. Are there apes? Would there be ape specific maritime laws?
Ape international law? Like how many ape laws are we talking right now? Ape traffic law?
I live for the ape laws.
Right. Wow.
Yeah, you
wow.
Got it. Sleepy Kev's never heard that song, but he tried.
Oh wow. I wrote every time Charlton Heston has a plan, his plan is just, okay, looks like I'm outnumbered about 1,000 to 1, so I'm just gonna try to run and attack them. And he just like runs into a crowd and gets caught immediately. Like even the chase scenes were so repetitive because it was just Charlton Heston being like, all right, I have a 1% chance of succeeding, let's go, and then just like running and getting caught by like 15 people immediately. I just thought that was kind of dumb. Then I kind of started ruminating on the ending, right? And like I already knew it was gonna happen. I've seen pictures of it before. It, as you're right, it kind of culturally osmosis its way into my brain I knew the ending. And so this kind of interlude, while I saw it was kind of expanding on those themes of like the traditionalist people won't let history be known or whatever, I could see that it was leaning into those themes. I just didn't find it very interesting at this point because we got the main character free, so let's keep moving. So yeah, I don't know. When you know the ending, it's just hard to contextualize that whole section and not feel kind of impatient, I guess, because the movie runs a little long. It's not paced in a way that makes that runtime work for me.
I get it.
Kev, what's your popcorn?
All right, let's go quickly here. Loved the design of the ship. Thought that was really cool. I have a note here. I don't know if 20 plus minutes of guys walking around makes sense for a movie called Planet of the Apes.
No.
I noted that we see an ape 32 minutes into the film.
Mm-hmm.
which is pretty incredible. I love the hunter photo. I thought that was hysterical. When the apes decide to take the smug hunter photo, basically the Cecil the Lion photo. So good. So good. I immediately called out Dr. Zaius as, quote, a fucking wild animal, insane guy. Loved human see, human do. Let's see. Talked about the handheld camera. Oh, the accent on the apes. I really loved that the apes just sounded like people.
Yeah.
And that everybody wasn't trying to put on some fucking gruff voice.
Yeah.
Let's see. Taylor looks like a crazed gold rush prospector. How about the scene where he goes, lots of women, lots of lovemaking, but no love. Like,
yes.
We don't need to know that. Like, what kind of line? We have to know he fucks. That was a
we
has
have
to, be
to know.
And women.
Yeah, we need a hot woman and we need to know he fucks. Truly.
What else do I have here? Quickly. I love the reveal of Lanyon's brain mark, his weird bite scar. That was incredible. That was really hardcore. I was not prepared for that. The tribunal doing the see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil was great. Really funny and underrated meme format. The Forbidden Zone reminded me of a Star Trek Next Generation episode where they go to Mexico City to film. Like a canyon for 2 days.
Oh.
It was very fun. The last thing I want to call out is Dr. Zaius picks up a human doll, like a baby doll.
Yes.
And it is the most horrifying, cursed piece of shit that I have seen in a movie in quite some time.
Yeah, it's pretty evil.
And I lied because the last thing I actually want to call out is the strongest net in genre film. Charlton Heston, like two or three times in this movie, is like charging on an ape and they'll throw a net on him and then he'll like fall to the ground and that's it for Charlton Heston in that scene.
Yep.
What is on those nets?
Weights. I have no idea.
That would be great. Like a 20 pound net.
It's like those weighted blankets that people use for anxiety, but it's a net version of it.
God, I need one of those so bad, dude. Can I just say I need one of these Planet of the Apes nets?
I thought you meant the weighted blanket for your anxiety.
No, no, I absolutely did. But I'll use it.
Oh, as a net. I see.
Exactly. So that's all my popcorn. Kenzo, we gotta hear the rating. Everybody brace yourselves.
Yeah, I mean, I'm torn because like while I didn't super love any of it, it wasn't like oppressively bad. Like I just wasn't super interested in it. I just kind of found it to kind of wash over me and kind of go away. I don't know, it just didn't quite do much for me, but it wasn't like the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. I really loved Zira, and I think I could see a lot of the themes that might be even more fun in future films to be really exciting. And so I don't think it's like bad enough to 2.5 while I didn't super love it.
Oh,
so I'm going to give it 3. I'm going to give it 3 because I don't think it's like, I don't think it needs to go that low, even though I didn't personally really get anything out of it. I think it just didn't really work for me. And I do think I liked maybe the newer one better, and I gave that one 3.5. So I feel like this one's got to land around 3. So far, I do like the reboot a little bit more. I think the characters are a bit more interesting. And at least with Caesar, I feel like I can really identify with him and care for him. And so I'm a little bit more invested in that series, I think, that version of the series. But yeah, it was fine. I'm glad I've seen it. So 3 stars.
Yeah, I feel like that's where most people land on this. And that is totally understandable. I get it.
Most of my mutuals are like at 4 and 5. Like I'm gonna be an outlier for my mutuals at least.
I mean, I'm at 5.
Yeah.
I'll reveal. But also, I mean, I'll call them out. Slim and Danny, I think, have this at 3 and 3.5. Mm. You know, like the criticisms are very valid. This is one of those episodes where like I get it. In fact, this time I was watching the 20th minute of climbing up the rock. And I was like, oh, Kenzo's not. This is it.
Oh, no.
Oh, brother.
Oh, no.
But I get it. And I think that there's really interesting stuff. We're going to have to watch Beneath, which is good. I think it's solid. But But then Escape and Conquest have some really interesting stuff. That's where I think you'll find a lot of meat on the bone, so to speak.
Hell yeah, I'm excited.
The bone of the War of the Planet of the Apes.
Austin Powers in.
Yeah, Austin Powers in the Planet of the Rose. Shall we?
Let's do our little show.
I love gold! This film was nominated for 2 regular awards and received an honorary award.
Oh,
so
sure.
First, Morten Hack with 2 A's, nominated for Best Costume Design. And one of our big connections, Jerry Goldsmith, nominated for his score.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Goldsmith, absolutely a legend. He was John Williams for Star Trek people. If you don't know him, because he did the score for the movies and et cetera. The honorary award was to John Chambers for his outstanding makeup achievement. So props to him. The National Board of Review, this was on the top 10 films. Mackenzie gasped.
Well, no, you know the story about how the makeup award actually then came into being about like 12-ish years later, right?
No, I don't.
It's because of the Elephant Man, because David Lynch's The Elephant Man has a very impressive recreation of John Joseph Merrick. And there was this outcry because no honorary award was given to them. So there was no way to award this incredible makeup job. And so there was kind of an outcry that led to the creation of the Best Makeup Award at the Oscars.
That's an amazing story. What great synergy for you. Your other 2 podcasts link so well.
Hell yeah.
But those are pretty much it. National Board of Review put it in the top 10. This was a hard year to be Planet of the Apes in the award season.
Mm.
Is there anything even worth the Laurel Awards? It was nominated for Action Drama. At the Genesis Awards in 1996, it won Best Classic Award. And the DVD box set won the 2009... No, it was nominated for a Saturn Award for Best DVD Collection.
Mm.
It did not win. Let's see what beat it. Let's see. Oh, the winner was The Godfather, the Coppola restoration, which was actually a really great set. Mm. So who am I? Every restoration of The Godfather was great. Moving on now to the Alan Parsons Project. This is our segment every week where we link the film of the week to the Austin Powers trilogy. And this is one of our most tangential links with Just Dose. 2
Ooh.
Links. First, special effects, Greg C. Jensen Jr., who will give us The Scorpion King and Speed. So very exciting.
Hell yeah.
And of course, the legend Jerry Goldsmith, whose involvement with Austin Powers I now need to investigate, because I don't think I've ever actually investigated what his connection is. And now I'm getting nervous.
Uh-oh.
Because what is he connected to? Oh my God. This is a really dramatic episode, by the way. In Like Flint. That's the link. Austin Powers' favorite movie. The score is by Jerry Goldsmith.
Wow.
So, Jensen Jr., we thank you. And 2 seconds of In Like Flint, I don't even think you can hear the score in those 2 seconds because Austin is saying,
In Like Flint, that's my favorite movie.
That's my favorite movie.
One of the best quotes.
Shout out to Jerry Goldsmith. One of the best quotes of the movie.
That might be
him.
One of the most tenuous links in history.
I think 0 is a bit more tenuous, but I agree with you. I agree that this is pretty thin. There you are, you're over there.
I need the I am in the office, everyone. There are no U's over there. I'm in the office, everyone. And the door is closed. Rachel is across the house. I just got a DM saying, In Like Flint, that's my favorite movie, in all caps. I need everyone to know this is the... And then she just said, I can hear you, yes. So Rachel now
this
knows
is
she
power.
Is on the podcast. Anyway, okay, Rachel, I'm not reading your messages out loud anymore because there are no U's over there, but if you would like to be over there, you can send a letter or a voicemail to austindangerpodcast@gmail.com. We'll share it on the show. It's the best way to make your voice be heard, especially since we are lazy and keep forgetting to pull the Letterboxd reviews. So the best way to ensure your voice is heard is hitting that email box and saying hi. Say hi to us.
Yeah, we're your friends. Kinda.
I should say it like that. We are your friends, everybody. Jesus Christ. Kev, we gotta fucking figure out what we're watching next week.
That's on you. Okay. Fine. I'm free of guilt today. There's a, oh, wow. That's quite a reaction.
This is quite a reaction because this is a movie we were literally just talking about in our DMs like days ago.
Uh-oh.
Based on that alone, can you tell what it is?
No.
Well.
Can you give me a hint?
On April Fool's Day, I sent Kev a DM that this film was going to be getting a Blu-ray release. And Kev was like, there's no way this is, or 4K release. And Kev was like, there's no way this is not April Fool's joke. And I was like, Kev, here's a pre-order link. And he was like, I don't know, Mackenzie. I can't trust anyone or myself. And then eventually Shout Factory put on their official social media, not a joke, they are releasing 1993's Matinee on 4K. Letterboxd describes this movie as showman introduces a small coastal town to a unique movie. I don't think I know what this movie's about. A unique movie experience and capitalizes on the Cuban Missile Crisis hysteria with a kitschy horror extravaganza combining film effects, stage props, and actors in rubber suits in the salute to the B movie. I did not know that's what this movie's about because I've never seen it, Kev.
Yeah, this is a killer. This is a killer movie for me. My 5-star review on Letterboxd. No coincidence that this film and I were both produced within the same year.
That is an incredible review, Kev. That is an incredible review.
So take that for what you will. I love this film. Joe Dante.
This is going to be Joe Dante's return to the show after The Burbs and Small Soldiers, both awesome episodes.
Wow. It's been 2 years, really?
I think so.
Thereabout?
Yeah, because Burbs was the last. Summer, maybe? I think, yeah. Yeah. Small Soldiers, I think, one of our all-time great episodes. Are you kidding me?
All right, next week. Oh, Matinee. Folks, please watch this one. It's great. I really love it. It's a little schmaltzy, but if people didn't like corn, a Jolly Green Giant would be out of business. So with that in mind, goodbye, and we will see you next week. But until then, from Mackenzie, this is Kev. Austin Danger Podcast, peace!
If you want to find us on social media, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at Austin Danger Pod. This episode was mixed and edited by me, Mackenzie. Thanks for listening. Zibiwapaduse. What did she say?
Zabakipiwebo.
Zabakipiwebo.
And our gluttony quoth, Zabazuizuray. Well, he bit all the he-dogs and winked at all the she-dogs.
Why do you know this? Why do you know this?
The town never knew such a hullabaloo.
Why do you know this?
Something, something till the end of that day.
Why do you have that memorized?
Yeah, you know why. I have clinical depression. Zabakipiwebo. Aberriffa Fabo Indog Latin equal. Yeah, I'm getting better at it now. I'm remembering more of it now.
Should we do our podcast?
Zaba Zib is a Ray.